State Detective Agency.
Me, sweetheart.
Sam, how importune.
Hmm?
I was just thinking of you.
Me and who else? Both my ears were burning.
No, Sam. No. With regards to our shortage of office supplies.
Don't give it another thought, Eph. This one's going to be a short report.
Short and sweet, Sam?
Hardly, Angel. In fact, barely.
Well, Sam, if you had asked me, I could have told you. That girl was merely trying to stir up a tempest in her boyfriend's teapot.
Again?
It was perfectly observant to me, Sam, that she had sour grapes written all over her.
Sour apples, Effie, but you're warm, and that's why I'm so fond of you.
Oh, thank you, Sam. I'm glad I could be of help, though I must confess the apples are over my head.
Well, don't feel bad about it. That's how Newton discovered the law of gravity. Stay where you are. I'll be right down to dictate my report on the Apple of Eve caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair. Remember the Romeo of yesteryear? Hair parted in the middle, all plastered down? Man, what a difference today. Today, all a guy has to do to impress a gal is use Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Wild Root Cream Oil grooms the hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose dandruff. If you're still using old-fashioned hair tonics or none at all, then for her sake, spruce up today with Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. In bottles or the handy new tube, it's again and again the choice of men who put good grooming first. And now, with Howard Duff starring as Spade, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in the adventures of Sam Spade.
Oh, Sam. Come right in.
Sure. Why are you so nervous?
Oh, nothing, really. I'm just glad to see you, dear.
Oh, I'm glad to see
That's
you.
That's all.
Come on, out with it. What are you hiding behind your back?
Well, it's a surprise, Sam. So you just run along into your office, and I'll be right with you.
Surprise, huh? Let me think. Father's Day? No, surely not.
Oh, no, Sam, no. It's just as regards our shortage of office supplies. I do hope you'll be able to mince your words.
What's all that junk you got stuffed in between the pages of your notebook?
Where? Well, Sam, you see, improvisation is a child of necessity, so, to stretch our supplies, I just cut up some old strips of waste paper in case we run out of the genuine.
Well, very ingenious. Shall we commence?
Hmm? Yes. But not too many corrections, Sam. I'm afraid this eyebrow pencil might not last.
Well, don't bear down on it. Where was I?
No place, Sam.
Date?
I already have that, Sam.
Oh, this one goes to... Hey.
Yes, Sam?
The calendar, where is it?
Calendar? Which calendar, Sam?
You know perfectly well which calendar. It's been hanging there on the wall for 3 years. The one from Harold's Club in Reno.
Oh, that old calendar. It was out of date anyway, Sam.
That calendar was timeless.
It was not, Sam. It was vulgar.
That's a lie. I met the girl who posed for it.
In more modest circumstances, I hope.
Put it back.
Now, Sam, don't.
Eph, what did you do with that calendar?
Well, you mustn't incite yourself, Sam.
Let me see that notebook.
Yes, Sam.
Uh-huh. Old waste paper, indeed. An art treasure mutilated, and for what? To serve your own base purposes. Just because you were too absent-minded to order a few office supplies.
But I frequently alluded to our dwindling resources, Sam. But no, you were too proud.
Take these and put them in a safe place. You can put it back together with scotch tape on your own time.
Oh, we're out of scotch tape, Sam.
We've got a first aid kit, haven't we?
We used to.
Use the adhesive. Date, June 19, 1949. I won't soon forget that. Two, Detective Lieutenant Dundee, homicide detail, San Francisco Police, from Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, the Apple of Eve caper. Dear Dundee. The start of it was yesterday when Eve Adams first walked into my office. She was angry and she was terribly, terribly hurt. In fact, she had a shiner, a swollen jaw, and somebody had bitten her on the arm.
And furthermore, she had the audacity to suggest that there was something shady between I and Mr. Hagen when it is an item of public information that her and Gorse Hagen was washed up practically before they started. And I might just add in passing...
Just a minute, Miss Adams. You say this girl came to your apartment in a jealous rage and attacked you without provocation.
None whatsoever. I never opened my trap to her except to remind her that it would have been a blessing to the human race if her old man had never met her old lady. And if she thought those three layers of pancake on her puss could fool a blind man as to her true age, and seeing as what her mouth was, she should never open it for fear of what might come out.
I see. And a girl's name?
Down at that flea bag where she works, she's billed as Dream of Love. And is she ever a nightmare?
Dream of Love. That's D-R-E-A-M-A?
It says there, but I do not intend to take this episode lying down on my chin, Mr. Spade. Why, if it had not been for the timely arrival of my concierge, that cheap nail would have brained me with my own gin bottle.
I see. Landlady broke it up. And you say she threatened to return with a gun and blast you if you continued seeing Mr. Hagen.
That is a fact. And she is just cheap enough to try some low trick like that.
Mm-hmm. And what do you want me to do, Miss Adams?
I want you should pay a formal call on that dame and tell her that upon the very next occasion of any violence or threats thereof out of her, I'm going to yell cop. In fact, Mr. Spade, I am placing my life and limbs in your hands, and if you are anything of what you're cracked up to be, you will have no difficulty in giving that creepy crow the bum's rush straight out of my life.
Pardon me, Miss Adams. My secretary seems to be calling me.
Out of my way. I know who's in there, and I'm going in. Out of my way.
Mrs. Spade, it's her. Keep her off.
You should have hired the 4th Marines, dearie.
Now, now, ladies. Ladies,
no,
please.
No, no, no,
break
no,
it up.
You don't. I'll show you who to get tough with.
You
don't tell me, Shammers, or I'll let you have it.
Now, now, ladies, please. Now, let's talk this over calmly and sensibly.
Okay, you asked for it.
Now, ladies.
Oh.
Please. Don't hit me again. No, you can have the jewels.
Sam. Oh, Sam, you poor darling.
Hmm?
Here, drink this.
What is it? Tastes awful.
Water, Sam.
Oh. Where'd they go?
Well, they chased each other down the hall. I thought you'd gone out.
I did. What did she hit me with?
Well, she took a sap out of her purse and let fly before I could prevent it.
Yeah.
But you were still on your feet when you told me to close the door.
Fine thing. Help me up.
Yes, Sam.
Easy, easy.
Oh, when I think of you lying in here unconscious all that time while I went out to lunch.
What?
If anything had happened to you, I'd never forgive myself.
You call this nothing?
Oh, you poor, dear, brave boy. Now, you just sit down and relax. Now, the ambulance would be here any minute.
Ambulance? Don't you know these things cost money?
Well, I'm sorry, Sam. I lost my head. When I saw you lying there all of a heap,
forget
I couldn't
it, forget
help
it. What's that gadget there on the floor?
Oh, it's lipstick. Must have dropped out of her purse when she opened it for the sap.
Huh. Apple of Eve.
It's a ghost color, Sam.
Apple of Eve. Unique Garage. Harry speaking.
Spade, this is Dream of Love.
Keep your distance. Look, you left your lipstick, but don't bother to come after it. I'll mail it to you.
What kind is it?
Apple of Eve.
Sorry, I've never used it.
Good, then I won't give you another thought.
Oh, but you got to. She's dead.
Eve Adams?
Yeah. She jumped into a taxi in front of your building. I went straight after her. But I got caught in traffic where they're tearing up Market Street.
That could be anywhere between the Embarcadero and Twin Peaks. Fine alibi. What comes next?
Well, I'm at her apartment now, and she's dead.
Sam!
Hold on. Yaffe?
There's your ambulance. Shall I send them away? What shall I do with them?
Well, it's $10 now anyhow. I'll use it for a taxi. Hello, Miss Love?
Yeah?
Stay there and don't touch a thing. I'll be right over. Dream, I hadn't waited, if that was really where she'd called me from. Eve Adams was on the bedroom floor in front of a dressing table. There was broken glass all over the floor. The place reeked of perfume. The front of her negligee was splashed with red. I looked for the wound, but I didn't find any. Then I looked at her hands. All the nails on her left hand and two on the right were the same color as the stain on her clothing. Evidently, she'd been seated at the dressing table putting on nail polish when the murderer entered the room. The back of her head had been creased by the well-known blunt instrument, such as a heavy sap. I felt the bumps on my head and looked at the overturned nail polish bottle on the dressing table. It was called Apple of Eve.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade. Now, here's important news on good grooming. If you want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead, socially and on the job, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? The results were amazing. Better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. Remember, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil contains lanolin. It grooms the hair naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose, ugly dandruff. So if you want your hair to be more attractive than ever before, get the generous new 25-cent size of Wild Root Cream Oil, America's leading hair tonic, on sale at all drug and toilet goods counters. It's also available in larger economy bottles and the handy new tube. By the way, smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil too, and mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. Get Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men and women and children too. And now, back to the Apple of Eve caper. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
Second time around the murder apartment, I noticed something I hadn't caught the first time. Some smears of Apple of Eve nail polish that didn't show very distinctly against the rust-colored carpeting, but left a clear trail across the kitchen linoleum. When I opened the back door, I smelled burning cloth. There was an incinerator just outside, and from it I fished a man's shirt, partially burned. The initials in the pocket were still intact, so were the red stains under them. The initials were G.H. The stains were, you guessed it, Lieutenant Dear, Apple of Eve.
Yeah?
I'm looking for Miss Dream of Love. Is she home?
No, she isn't.
Thanks. I'll come in and wait.
Hey, wait a minute. You... Okay, you're in. What do you want with her?
She's in a little trouble.
You a cop?
When do you expect her back?
I don't know. What's this trouble?
She threatened to kill a woman, and now she's dead.
Who?
A girl named Eve Adams.
Why would she want to kill Evie?
The way I got it, they were locking horns over a guy named Gorse Hagen. You know him?
Yeah, and I wish I didn't.
Who is he?
He used to run a gambling ship down at Malibu till the law turned it into a bait barge. Now he calls himself a yachtsman. But if you're trying to connect him up with my sister, it's a bad connection. She hasn't seen him in years.
His idea or hers?
Hers and mine.
Then what was the beef? And who are you?
I'm her brother. Eddie's my name. And why would there be any beef between those two? Evie was my sister's best friend, and she was engaged to me.
Then this news must be quite a shock to you. You're taking it like a little soldier.
She was asking for it. I warned her. I begged her to leave town with me. But no, she couldn't sneak off like that without letting Gorse know the score. I told her he'd kill her before he'd let her go.
Mm-hmm. You live here, Eddie?
Yeah, what of it?
Where do you keep your shoes?
In a closet, kidder. Where do you keep yours? Under the bed?
Which closet? In here?
Hey, wait a minute, you.
Get your hands off of me.
Let me see your warrant. It better be good or you're going out of here on your head.
Take your hands off me, Eddie.
Let's see that warrant.
All right, I got a warrant, Eddie. Here. I didn't find what I was looking for, a pair of crepe-soled shoes with traces of Apple of Eve nail polish on them, but in one of his coat pockets, I found a sales slip from a department store cosmetics counter. There were several items, but the one that interested me said, one lipstick nail polish set, Apple of Eve. About then, I smelled brandy, and a voice behind me said,
what happened to the kid?
Huh? Oh, he asked for my warrant.
Well, when you come to see me, I'll know better.
Your name is Gorse Hagen. I'm headed for your place right now.
What are you looking for?
A pair of shoes with crepe soles.
What do you want with my deck shoes?
I thought maybe they'd match up with this piece of a shirt with your initials on it.
Give me that.
That's a fact.
Where'd you get that?
In the incinerator at Eve Adams' place.
Well, that don't prove anything. Lots of people got the same initials. Have you talked to, George Howard?
He's alibied. He's out of town.
That proves it's a frame. I don't know any George Howard.
I thought so.
Okay, let's cut out the monkey business. Give it to me.
It's evidence.
Give it to me!
All right, I'll give it to you. I did. He gave it right back to me. I was only losing on points until I tripped over poor old Eddie and lost my balance. That's when he gave me the coup de grace. Ew! I wasn't quite unconscious, but somehow I just didn't feel like getting up. And when the apartment door opened, I opened my good eye just wide enough to see Dream of Love walk in.
Gorse, what are you doing here?
I come to help you, Dreamer.
I don't need any help from you, Gorse. I told you that 3 years ago.
Did you kill her?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You killed Eve Adams. Why?
You're wrong, Gorse. I haven't seen Evie in ages.
Why did you kill her?
All right, I did it.
Yeah? Why?
I was jealous. Seeing the two of you together after all we'd been to each other. Go on, laugh at me. I committed murder out of love for you. It's very funny, isn't it?
I'm very fond of you, Dreamer. My poor little Dreamer love. I'd give you anything, honey. The shirt from my back. Here. Here's a piece of it on the counter.
What? Where'd you...
I see you're impressed. Me too. Come on, we'll go someplace where we can be alone and talk things over.
Oh, no, Gorse, please. I can explain everything.
You can explain in the car on the way down to the boat. Come on.
You're hurting me. Oh! No!
Come on,
please.
Out the door.
Stupid me, I stagger to my feet and stumble over to the door. I reached it just as Hagen's car pulled away from the curb. By the time I found a taxi, they were at least halfway to wherever they were going. I didn't know whether the boat he had mentioned was tied up at the Embarcadero, anchored in the marina, moored at Sausalito, or becalmed in Oakland. But there was a seafaring man in our town who knew about such things. My port of call was the Seahorse Bar and Grill just off ahead of Pier 16, or is it the Foot? Captain Pasalti?
Tea is silent, son, as in Prasad.
My mistake.
Salty by name, and salty by nature. Only one salty thing I can't abide. Saltwater taffy. My teeth, you know. Here, have a lifesaver.
Well, thank you, sir. You're very generous.
No, it ain't money, matey, but it's straight from the mint.
That joke wasn't.
What's up, sonny? You in the hole again? You catch my drift?
Yeah, what do you know about a yachtsman named Gorse Hagen?
Oh, nicely put, matey. If there's anything lower than a yachtsman, he's it.
Mm-hmm. Where's he keep his boat?
Well, now, she's still afloat. She'd be dragging her hook somewhere off Sausalito. Now, she's a converted PT, you know. He calls her the Sea Queen.
Mm-hmm.
She had her bottom planks ripped out in the Battle of the Coral Sea, and they patched her up with plywood. Well, she's got two diesels, she has, and twin screws, 2-to-1 reduction gear.
Yeah, yeah. What's the quickest way of getting out to her?
Well, there's not much craft or chart to hear about this time of night, you know. There's that Novak fella, but just at present he's sleeping one arm.
Figures.
Might not be worth your while anyways.
Why not?
Well, Hagen stopped by here 20 minutes ago looking for his engineer. Said he was casting off on tide, engineer or no engineer.
What about your boat?
My boat? Well, now, matey, on a plotted course, she'll stand up to any double-ender Monterey dory in the class.
Yeah.
Without a head sea, that is. Then on t'other hand, you put her in a bottom race, and buck and a quarter swell.
Yeah, yeah. How much? How much?
$5 an hour. And that's with you, man, in the bilge pumps.
Okay, let's go.
This here Hagen fella now, you on to the trim of his sails?
Sails on a PT boat?
Oh, not the boat, sonny. The man, cut of his jib.
I didn't notice that, but he was wearing crepe-soled shoes.
Mm. I'll tell you about this Hagen, matey. Fella once tried to board him. A customs officer, no less. What's up? Picked him up 4 days later in a gill net with a fish gaff stove clean through his neck. Here, have another lifesaver. You may need it.
After he had lashed me to my station at the bilge pump, Captain Pasalti got his double-ender Monterey dory on a plotted course to Sausalito, he hoped, and we plunged recklessly into the fog. As nearly as I could catch his drift, there was a 50-50 chance that A, Hagen had found his engineer and would be halfway to the Farallone Islands before we could make it past Alcatraz if we stayed afloat that long, or B, that he hadn't found his engineer and might be having trouble starting up those two diesels with the twin screws and the 2-to-1 reduction gears, whatever they are.
She lies, matey.
Which one?
Oh, about 5 points to port. The gray one with the high freeboard.
Uh-huh.
You get up on the foredeck, matey. Her ladder's round on the landed side. I'll swing round and put you on it.
Hey! Anybody home?
He's likely below, nursing them diesels. You got to rear back and holler, Major, like this.
Ahoy, the Sea Queen!
I like that.
I know the rhythm.
Who are you? Captain Salty, board the Ledger Crabtree. My supercargo requests permission to board, sir. Who is he?
Spade! I want to talk to you, Hagen. Captain Salty.
Flop down, you clumsy lubber. Hit the scuppers.
Where'd he get you?
Done right thing, no. Hurt some midships, no?
Here. How do you run this thing? I got to get you to shore.
That throttle. There's your forward gear. Oh. Don't pull her back all the way. She'll die. A vacuum tank.
You lie still. What are you looking for?
Jumper pocket. Lifesaver. In case you need it. I don't know more. Best winds on your after quarter, matey, remember?
Okay, take it easy, Captain.
Keep her balanced. Don't let your jib ruffle. Keep her on course, matey. Keep...
Hey, Captain. Captain Salty. Sour racket. I crawled over the rail and tried to make out Hagen's silhouette on the other boat. I could just barely make out the shape of the hull against the faint glow of light from the Sausalito shore. We drifted a few yards astern of Hagen's boat, but not out of rifle range. I wondered why, if he could see us well enough to drop Captain Salty, he'd let it go at that. And I got it. He was listening. Somebody was pulling out from shore in a rowboat. I didn't waste any more time listening. I dug into Captain Salty's jumper pocket, fished out a waterproof pouch. I took his seaman's papers out of it. He didn't need them anymore. Wrapped it around my gun. Then I took off some clothes and eased myself over the side. I didn't swim for speed, but for distance. Stopping now and then to make sure the man in the boat was still covering for me. I felt my way around the hull till I found the anchor rope. Just as I grabbed it, I heard him rest his oars.
Hagen, who's that? Eddie Love.
What do you want?
I've come after my sister.
Go on home, Eddie. She's sailing with me. That's the way she wants it.
You're lying.
Wait a second. Come on out of there, Dreamer.
What's happened?
Your brother's down there in the boat. Talk to him.
Well, what am I going
to... Talk to him.
All right. Eddie.
What's he done to you, sis?
I'm all right, Eddie. Everything's all right. Gorse and I have decided... Go on home, Eddie.
He's lying to you. He knows you framed him. If you sail out with him, you won't come back.
No, Eddie.
I'm coming aboard.
Eddie, no. Gosh, please. No, Eddie.
Drop it, Hagen.
No.
Drop the rifle.
I'll drop you, you lousy Seamus.
Sam, did he hurt you?
No, I've been kicked in the stomach before. But it takes a woman to kick you in the teeth.
I'm sorry.
I don't care what you did. What burns me up, you didn't do it right. I hate a bungler, especially a female bungler.
I'm a bungler. You're the one. It would have worked if you hadn't gone poking in the incinerator. I should have called the police. They'd have known what to do with evidence like that. They've been wanting to get something on Gorse ever since repeal.
Listen, Angel, any flatfoot could have seen through that setup. Eve Adams was sitting in front of a mirror when she was maced. She saw the murderer enter the room. She got it in the back of the head. That means she trusted whoever walked up behind her. That also means the evidence of a struggle was faked.
Put the nail polish on Gorse's shirt.
You put that nail polish on her fingers after she was dead, laid that trail to the incinerator with a pair of Gorse's shoes where any flatfoot was supposed to think he'd try to destroy the incriminating shirt. But the dumbest thing you did was lying to me about that matching lipstick you dropped in my office. That made you look guiltier than anybody, because anybody could have planted that fake evidence.
I didn't kill her. I'm not a murderer.
Your brother might have got off easy. Crime of passion.
Oh, please, please don't say that. I can't bear the thought that after everything I did, it's all come to nothing.
Here. Have a lifesaver. You may need it. Period. And a report.
Oh, Sam. Poor Captain Pasalty.
P is silent. F is in Passam. Go type that up.
All right, Sam.
Last one in the package.
And now, listen to this. If you want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead, socially and on the job, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? The results were amazing. Better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. Remember, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil contains lanolin. It grooms the hair naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose, ugly dandruff. So if you want your hair to be more attractive than ever before, get the generous new 25-cent size of Wild Root Cream Oil, America's leading hair tonic, on sale at all drug and toilet goods counters. It's also available in larger economy bottles and the handy new tube. By the way, smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil too, and mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. Get Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men and women and children too.
I got.
What stopped you?
The last page of my notebook owing to our shortage of supplies, Sam. But in a way, I'm glad. Because I didn't have to go through it again. I mean, my poor Captain Basaldi.
F, please. Please, now, honest, I'll buy you a new notebook, a nice fat one. Would you like that?
Oh, yes, Sam. There's always something so final about final pages of things. When I think of all the risks you take...
To say nothing of my clients... I think I'll put a new sign on the door. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here.
Oh, but I haven't, Sam. Where there's a will, there's a wisp.
There's a what?
A wisp, Sam. Small amount.
Which reminds me, there's a couple of fingers left. Join me, just a wisp?
Oh, no, Sam. One of us has got to have a clear head.
Well, it'll be me.
Your best. Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. Howard Duff can now be seen starring with Yvonne DiCarlo in Universal International's Technicolor production of Calamity Jane and Sam Bass.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry, for that FCC obligation. Yes, my name is Arthur, and you are listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Again, that was Dashiell Hammett's character, Sam Spade. He had developed his own show there with Howard Duff, The Adventures of Sam Spade. I have tied it back into last week, Humphrey Bogart and To Have and Have Not played Sam Spade in The Maltese Falcon. 2 weeks ago, I played The Thin Man, which is also a Dashiell Hammett story. And this week, from the vaults here at WMFO, I've played this before, The Fat Man. This was an original, Dashiell Hammett's only original creation for radio. So I'm going to go ahead and play one of that. I'm going to try and cut out a little early because I have another show coming up after this, but I've never done the remote transition to a remote show, so I figured I'd practice with myself, seeing how the new schedule is going to turn over here in a few weeks. Incidentally, friend of the show, Jack Webb, was actually in the Adam, the Apple of Eve caper. He played the brother there that got shot at the end. And there was a reference to Novak, his character at the time on radio, Pete Novak. All right, with that, keep yammering here. I'll go ahead and start the Fat Man. Thanks for listening.
There he goes. He's stepping on the scales. Weight, 237 pounds. Fortune, danger. Who is it?
Brad Runyon, the Fat Man. Crime, like death and taxes, is always with us. As long as there are crooked politicians and ambitious racket guys, the answer will be graft. If rich women continue to be careless with their jewels, there'll be headline robberies. And until somebody can change human nature, hatred in a heart and a gun in a hand will always add up to murder.
The American Broadcasting Company brings you, in part transcribed, The Adventures of Brad Runyon, the Fat Man, starring J. Scott Smart, an exciting and fast-moving criminologist who tips the scales at 237 pounds. Tonight's adventure, Order for Murder.
I'd been in Washington, D.C. that day, finishing up a job, and a friend of mine who lives some 40 miles south toward the Maryland coast had asked me down for the weekend. I hadn't seen him in several years, and since I had my car, I decided to go. I ate dinner before leaving and cleared Washington just after dark. The traffic dwindled off gradually, and 30 minutes later, I was rolling along a dark, deserted stretch of road on the Maryland side, not far from the Potomac River. I must have been just about opposite Mount Vernon when the motor of my car suddenly sputtered and died. I got out, but I couldn't find the trouble. It was a warm night, and back in the woods, a chorus of frogs were really whooping it up. I lit a cigarette, trying to remember the last house I'd passed, then saw the headlights of a car coming toward me. I stepped out and waved my lighted cigarette up and down.
What's the trouble?
My car broke down. Can you give me a lift into the nearest town?
I'm going that far.
Well, do you live out here?
No.
Or I can use the phone.
Get in, I'll take as far as I'm going. Past the house, I'll drop you off.
Well, don't they have a phone where you're going?
I wouldn't know. Get in if you want to ride.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, mind lighting a cigarette for me?
Yeah, keep it in your mouth. I'll hold the match for you. Here you are.
Sorry, I should have warned you about the scar.
Well, I didn't mean
it. That's all right. Come on, hold the match for me.
Here.
Well, go ahead. Ask me how it happened. I'm used to it. 7 years is a long time.
The war?
Yeah, out in the islands. That sweet, lovely, wonderful war. Maybe you know.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, it was great, wasn't it? More fun. So funny, I thought I'd die, you know? My name's O'Reilly. Johnny O'Reilly, and I'm not a kid. But you couldn't tell by the face, could you?
No, I guess I couldn't.
Remember that name, mister, because you're probably going to be seeing it in the papers soon.
Mm? Why?
I got a lot out of that war, but I didn't get any medals, and I should have got one, too, the big one. But I didn't get it. Somebody else got it. You know who got it?
Who?
A major got it. Tie that if you can. A major back of the lines who let me do the work and then took the credit. Well, I was hanging on at a hospital for more years than I like to remember.
Why didn't they try plastic surgery?
They did. 5 times. The best they could do. It was really fun. Been a long time coming back. But I'm back now. 7 years, nearly.
You were in the hospital 7 years?
Yeah, that's right.
Why didn't you protest when they gave this major the medal instead of you?
I did. It didn't do any good. In a way, I'm glad now.
Glad?
Yeah. I'm gonna make another protest in my own way. Yeah. As far as I can take you, I'm turning off down that little road over there.
Well, thanks for the lift.
It's a pleasure. Give me somebody to talk to.
Mind if I give you some advice?
No, I don't mind.
Forget the war. Make the best of things as they are.
It's just what I'm gonna do, mister.
The river's down that way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anything else?
Yeah, a major lives down there. I'm gonna pay him a visit.
I stood there watching the taillight of his car quickly fade out of sight down the little dirt road. It really wasn't any of my business, but the guy sounded upset enough to do anything. The least I could do was to try and stop him. I wondered how far it was to the river and started walking fast down the little dark road. I'd gone about a mile when the road turned off to the right, and I could see the Potomac River through the trees. The road now ran parallel to the river. And 5 minutes later, I saw the lights of a house up ahead. It stood well back from the road in a clump of trees and fronted on the river. There were no cars in sight. Beyond it, a couple of hundred yards, was another house. I started toward it when suddenly, down in the woods between the two houses, I saw the flicker of a small light. It flashed on, moved furtively around, and went out. I pushed into the woods and walked cautiously toward it.
George, it comes. They're down there in the graveyard. I just saw... You're not George.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to frighten you.
Who are you? Are you one of them?
One of who?
The spirits who are coming for the Major.
Major?
Yes. Major Smith. I knew they'd come. I knew they'd hear me. And now he'll suffer. Now he'll pay for his wickedness.
Does the Major live in that house?
No. That's my house. He lives over there beyond the graveyard. At least he did live there, but he won't live there anymore. Not after tonight.
Well, Miss Nancy. Miss Nancy, where are you?
Here I am, George. Over here.
Oh, yes, yes. What you doing out here, Miss Nancy? You catch cold.
George, I saw them. They were down there in the graveyard.
Who's this man?
Why, I don't know.
Well, my name is Runyon. I'm looking for Major Smith's house.
You're a friend of his?
No, I've never
but
even...
But I hate him. I hate him. I never wanted...
Oh, please, Miss Nancy, please. Now, you go on up to the house, Miss Nancy. I'll speak with this gentleman.
Yes, George. Yes, George. Anything you say.
Do you work for her?
Yes, sir. Please, I'll hope you forget what she said to you. You see, she ain't quite right in her head. But she don't mean no harm. Mr. Smith coming here to live after all these years and bringing a new young wife with him just sort of set it off again.
Why does she hate Major Smith so much?
Well, years ago when Miss Nancy and Miss Smith were both young folks, they was engaged to get married. But he changed his mind at the last minute and left Miss Nancy waiting at the church. He run off with another woman.
What's all that crazy talk about spirits?
Oh, that's just an idea she's got. That little graveyard over there belongs to the Smith family. Miss Nancy thinks his ancestors is coming out of the ground and taking him away.
Mm-hmm, I see. This young wife of Smith's, she isn't the one he ran off with when he left Miss Nancy, is she?
Oh, no, that one died a long time ago. This is a new one. And if you ask me, he's going to be sorry he ever laid eyes on her.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, she don't love him at all. They say she only married him for his money, and she'd like to get that just as soon as possible.
The old man turned and left me standing there in the woods. I looked down toward the graveyard, but no more light showed in the darkness. I went back to the road and walked quickly toward the Major's house. Just as I reached the gate, I heard a car coming along the road behind me. I stepped behind a tree and waited. The car stopped near the gate. I saw a man and woman sitting in the front seat. As I watched, they melted into a long embrace. Then the door opened, the woman got out. She said something in a low voice to the man, and the car swung around and disappeared up the road. The woman turned and started up toward the house. As she came abreast of me, I stepped out from behind the tree.
Oh, you startled me.
Don't be frightened. I'm not going to hurt you.
Well, who are you? What are you doing in my yard?
You live here?
Of course I live here. I'm Mrs. Smith.
You're Major Smith's wife?
Certainly.
Was that the major who just let you out of the car?
You saw us.
It wasn't the major, was it?
No, it wasn't. Who are you?
My name is Runyon. I'm a private detective.
So, my husband hired you to spy on me. All right, I'll save you some trouble. There is another man, and there always has been. I never loved Edgar, and he knew it. He was no good from the start. That's why he was court-martialed and discharged from the army. But if he wants to get rid of me, he's going to have to pay plenty. Now, anything else you want to know?
Mrs. Smith, your husband hasn't hired me. In fact, I've never even seen him.
Well, then why are you here? What do you mean
now,
by...
Just a minute. I met an upset guy on the road tonight, and he hates Smith. I think he may try to kill him. He sounded mad enough to be convincing. That's why I came here. Is your husband at home?
Why, yes. At least he was when I left several hours ago.
Well, come on, let's go inside.
Very well.
The guy dropped me back on the main road and headed in this direction.
He was in a car?
Yes, but I don't see it anywhere. Does Smith have a gun?
Yes, he has several of them.
Good. Hold it.
What is it?
Look there through the French doors.
Is that the man?
Yeah.
He's got a gun.
Yeah, he's covering your husband with it.
What'll we do?
Those French doors are open. Can you enter the front door without making any noise?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, take your time, go inside. And go around and open the door to that room. Open it fast and loud.
What are you going to do?
I'll slip over by those open French doors. When the door opens, he'll turn around and I'll grab him from behind.
Well, suppose he shoots when I open the door.
Don't step into the room. Just bang the door open suddenly. Mrs. Smith nodded silently and started for the front door. I eased over to the house and stopped in the shadows beside the open French doors and listened to Johnny taunt the major.
How do you like it, Smith? How do you like sitting there waiting, knowing you're going to get it in a minute?
You're insane. You're a madman.
Yeah, I'm plenty mad. It's been boiling in me for 7 years. You probably don't recognize me, but the name is O'Reilly, Smith. Remember Johnny O'Reilly?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about a certain night in the islands during the war. What?
Okay, Johnny, that's enough of that. Come on. Drop that gun. Drop it.
Not a chance.
Drop it. Grab the gun, Smith. Grab it.
Try this for size, Fatty.
Stop him. Stop him. He'll get away.
No, no. Let him go.
Give me that gun, you coward. I'll stop him. He's gone. Oh, you let him get away.
Wait, I couldn't help it, Phyllis. I couldn't seem to move.
Mr. Runyon, are you all right?
Yeah, I think so. He kneed me in the stomach, knocked the wind out of me.
He got away. It was my husband's fault. He could have stopped him.
Where's his gun?
Here it is.
Give it to me.
What are you going to do?
Your husband and I are going out there and find that guy.
Who are you?
Never mind that now. Your wife says you have some pistols. Where are they?
Here in this drawer.
You take one and give your husband one.
All right.
And you stay here. Come on, Smith.
Well, do you think it's wise to go out there?
We've got his gun.
Yes, but he might have another one.
Polish up that medal you won, Smith. It's time you earned it. We left Mrs. Smith in the house and went out into the grounds. The moon had come up and we could see fairly well in the dark. We circled the house once, saw nothing, and walked down the road toward the graveyard.
Here's the graveyard. Do you suppose he's hiding here?
He's hiding somewhere. We didn't hear his car drive off. I think he...
What's wrong?
Look.
What on earth?
Somebody's been doing some digging.
The grave. It's been opened.
Yeah, not very long ago either. This pile of dirt is fresh.
That explains the light you saw.
Yeah.
I don't understand this. The coffin's still in the grave, isn't it?
Yes, it's still down there.
Why would anybody want to open this grave?
Maybe Miss Nancy isn't so crazy after all, Smith. Or maybe somebody's just making room to add another coffin. Hey, who... I couldn't tell where the shot came from, but it hadn't been fired from close up. Smith clutched at his breast and then toppled forward into the open grave. I jumped down beside him and turned him over. His shirt front was covered with blood and his eyes were wide open. He'd never win any more medals or make any more enemies. He was dead. I crouched there beside him for nearly a minute, but nothing happened. And then I climbed out of the grave and started quickly back toward the house where we'd left his wife. Suddenly, I heard somebody moving through the trees ahead of me. Stopped and waited. Steps came closer and stopped 10 or 15 feet away.
Mr. Runyon? Oh, Mr. Runyon, where are you?
Over here, Mrs. Smith.
Oh, Mr. Runyon, I heard a shot a minute ago. I thought... Where's my husband? What's happened?
He's dead, Mrs. Smith.
Dead? Then that man did have another gun.
I'm not so sure about that.
What do you mean?
Your husband wasn't a very popular guy. There were a few other people around who might have liked to see him out of the way.
Are you trying to say that man didn't kill my husband?
No, I'm just saying it's possible he didn't.
Are you intimating that I...
Maybe. After all, you admitted to me tonight that you didn't love him, that you only wanted his money.
Well, that's true. I never loved him, and I did marry him for his money. But that's no crime. Lots of women marry men they don't love for that reason.
But they don't all have another sweetheart on the side.
My husband knew there was another man. I don't think he even cared.
He might have refused to give you a divorce.
That may be, but you're all wrong about this. I didn't shoot my husband.
You had a swell chance to do it. We left you in the house alone. You could have easily followed us. You had a gun. Where is it?
It's here in my coat pocket.
Let's see it.
Very well. Here. Well, are you satisfied?
Well, it hasn't been fired.
Of course it hasn't.
There's one other possibility, though.
What?
The woman who lives in that other house down the road.
Miss Nancy?
Yeah. She hated your husband and was prowling around out here in the dark when I arrived.
Surely you don't think she did it.
Well, somebody did it, and somebody dug up a grave over there a little while ago. And she was rambling on about spirits coming out of the ground to punish her husband.
Oh, it sounds fantastic.
It is. But we'd better go have a talk with her. And we've got to call the police.
Yes, but my husband, he's still lying out there.
We can't help him now, and the police won't want the body to be touched. We can call him from Miss Nancy's house.
There's a light on in the living room. She doesn't usually stay up this late.
Wait a second.
What's the matter?
Look over there across the road in that clump of trees.
A car?
Yeah, it's the one O'Reilly was driving.
Well, then he's still here. It must have been he who killed him, Mr. Runyon.
Come on, let's have a look at that car. Stay behind me. He may be hiding inside.
All right.
O'Reilly, if you're in the car, you better come out with your hands up. O'Reilly. Okay, I'm coming after you. Well, the car's empty. He's not here.
Are you sure it's his car?
Positive. He picked me up in it tonight.
What are we going to do?
I've got a hunch he'll be showing up soon if he hasn't spotted us. We better get back in those trees and wait. I took Mrs. Smith by the arm and drew her into the shadows. We stood there silently waiting. 10 or 15 minutes passed and nothing happened. I looked up toward Miss Nancy's house and saw that the light was still on in the living room. Suddenly, I felt Mrs. Smith's hand grip my arm. I held my breath and waited. Then I heard it. Somebody was moving stealthily toward the car. A second later, the figure of a man stepped into view. I slipped O'Reilly's gun out of my pocket and moved toward him. Freeze, O'Reilly. I got you covered.
Huh?
Don't move or you'll get a bullet in your back. Now put your hands up.
Okay. What are you looking for?
A gun.
I haven't got a gun.
No, not now you haven't. Where'd you throw it away, O'Reilly?
Throw it away? I didn't throw it away. You took it away from me. It's Smith's house.
I mean the second gun, the one you shot the major with.
I didn't shoot him, Runyon. I swear I didn't. Sure, I came out here to kill him, but I didn't do it. I couldn't have done it because I didn't have a second gun.
Why did you hang around here? Why didn't you beat it when you left the house?
I was afraid to try and make a break for the car, so I hid for those woods over by the graveyard. I was hiding out there when you and the Major found that grave and started talking about that crazy woman.
Did you open the grave, Riley?
Of course not. I heard the shot, and I saw Smith take that nosedive into the hole. I waited until you left, and then tried to sneak over here to my car.
You're lying. You killed my husband.
Okay, O'Reilly, start walking.
Where are we going?
To call the police and have a chat with Miss Nancy.
Thank you.
remember me?
Why, yes, sir. You're the gentleman who was down in the woods earlier this evening.
That's right.
Well, who are these people?
Murder suspects. Where's Miss Nancy?
She's gone to bed. She's asleep. Did you say murder?
Yeah. Now, please wake Miss Nancy up.
Who's been murdered?
Major Smith. Where's Miss Nancy's room?
Right over there. She sleeps on the ground floor.
Okay, wake her up.
Yes, sir. Miss Nancy. Miss Nancy. That's funny.
Open the door and get her up.
Miss Nancy.
What's wrong?
She's gone. Miss Nancy ain't in here.
Let me have a look in there.
George, I did it. He's dead. I killed. What are these people doing here, George?
Miss Nancy, they say that...
Just a second. Who's dead, Miss Nancy?
Why, the Major, of course.
How did you know?
How do I know? I know because I killed him, and I've just seen his body in the grave.
You killed him?
Certainly I killed him.
What did you do with the gun?
Gun? What gun?
The gun you shot him with.
I didn't shoot him. I didn't have to. For years I've been praying to them, but they wouldn't listen. So tonight, I decided to help them.
Oh, it was you who opened the grave?
Yes. Yes, I dug and dug, and finally they were freed. I went out just now to see if they'd gotten him. And there he was, dead, and in the grave. In the grave. Dead.
This dame is off a beam, Runyon. She don't know what she's talking about.
You're right, but she's harmless. She hasn't killed anybody. And neither have you.
That's right, I told you that.
I don't understand.
Maybe this'll help clear it up, sweetheart. You killed the Major. And O'Reilly here put the noose around your neck a few minutes ago.
I did?
That's right. You told us you were hiding near the grave when we found it tonight. You heard the Major and me talking about Miss Nancy, so you had to be pretty close to us because we were talking quietly. The shot that killed Smith came from 40 or 50 feet away, so it couldn't have been you who fired it.
But you saw my gun. You know it hadn't been fired.
That gun hadn't been fired, but you told me the Major had several guns. Very simple matter to carry two guns and toss one away after the shooting.
You're wrong.
No, I'm not, sweetheart. The other gun will cinch it when the police find it. The important thing to know is we have to look for it.
I tell you, I didn't...
Hold her, O'Reilly.
Okay, now behave, lady.
Hands off of me.
Where's the phone, George? I've got to put in a call to the police and tell them I've got a murderer out here for them.
The Fat Man, starring J. Scott Smart, in part transcribed, was directed by Clark Andrews. The script written by Richard Ellington. Heard on tonight's show were Vicki Vola as Phyllis and Jimmy McCallion as Johnny O'Reilly. The music was conducted by Bernard Green. Listen next week to another exciting adventure of The Fat Man.
Fat Man. I don't even know when the original air date was for that. Again, I got this. I knew it was here in the library at WMFO. Kind of going along with a couple weeks ago, I played The Thin Man, which was a Dashiell Hammett story. Last week, I played To Have or Have Not, starring Humphrey Bogart. And at the beginning of the show, I played The Adventures of Sam Spade. Humphrey Bogart portrayed Sam Spade and Dashiell Hammett's Maltese Falcon. So I went ahead and kind of mixed that in. and again with this fat man. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm not certain what I'll play next week, but coming up, it'll be an encore performance. You can hear that car revving down College Ave. Windows cracked. Anyway, coming up is going to be an encore performance of... I'm rebroadcasting a broadcast I did in, I think it was June 9th. I played War of the Worlds. So this is going to be following the conclusion of this show here in about 3.5 minutes. I'm going to go ahead and play out the detergent's ulcers here. Shut it down a little bit so that the computer can reset to rebroadcast War of the Worlds. Thanks for listening. See it in the queue. I tried to get this in last night, but I don't see it. Oh, these weird noises. I don't see it as being queued up on automation, so I guess you won't be hearing War of the Worlds after this. Thanks for listening.
COVID-19, WMFO DJs are pre-recording their shows for broadcast on air. We can still accept phone calls, but the phone line is in voicemail mode. Call 855-915-9636 and be sure to leave the DJ's name in the voicemail so we can forward it to the correct person. The following program was recorded earlier. Enjoy.